C1AP. Number 14A.
We stopped at page 568, line 5, because there is a break there. Though textually it is not brought out with a new paragraph, but the content of what follows shows us that it is a remark that needs special attention. Which attention? If you consider the marginal heading there, it says warfare with error. And you can see this typifies again the Michael state of consciousness, the warfare with error. If we go further down to the next marginal heading, which then is already in the tone of love, because with the next biblical note comes the tone of love, the marginal heading is, how do you pronounce it? Pen of love? Pen of Jubilee. And you can see that has quite a different tone than warfare with error. It has more the sense of the Gabriel state of thought, of rejoicing in the perfection of being. That will mean that here at the top of the page with the warfare with error, we come to the end of the tone of truth, and that later on we'll get the tone of love. And on that bridge from truth to love, Mrs. Eddy now has those few lines which run from line 5 to 12. And we want to consider these few lines quickly. Here she says, suddenly, though she is in the middle of explaining the 12th chapter, not at the end, not at the beginning, but in the middle of the 12th chapter, she says, suddenly the 12th chapter of the Apocalypse typifies the divine method of warfare in science and the glorious results of this warfare. The following chapters, that would be the chapter after chapter 12, there from 13 onward, the following chapters depict the fatal effects of trying to meet error with error. Now, why on earth should she say that in the middle of the 12th chapter? Why not at the end of the 12th chapter? That was puzzling me for quite a while. The narrative follows the order used in Genesis. Namely, in Genesis, first the true method of creation is set forth, and then the false. Here also, the Revelator first exhibits the true warfare, and then the false. But she goes on afterwards to interpret still chapter 12. Is that misplaced? Seems that the writer, an author would not write that way. That an author would put this at the end of the 12th chapter and say, now I have shown you the 12th chapter and it shows the divine method of warfare, and now follows the following chapter then will depict the false effects of trying to meet error with error. Why didn't she say so? So, this gives us quite something to think about. And I think the answer is given in the next verses of Revelation when we come to the tone of love. Because already in the 12th chapter now, in the tone of love, she already begins to show the true warfare and the wrong warfare. Up to this point, she didn't show the wrong warfare, only the true divine warfare. And therefore, in order to see that, we are first going to read, we come now to the tone of love, Revelation chapter 12, verses 10 to 12, and I read it first quickly, and then afterwards we go back, and just to show that now she, so to say, is at the crossroad and can show that either you can go on now with the true warfare or with the wrong sense of warfare. Let me read it quickly with some accentuation. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, we are still in heaven, now is come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God, that's the word, and the power of his Christ, for the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accuseth them before our God day and night, Christ. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they loved not their lives unto the death, Christianity. Therefore rejoice ye heaven, we're still in heaven. Therefore rejoice ye heavens, and ye that dwell in them. Woe! You see, suddenly the whole tone changes. Huh? Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea. It's no more in heaven. It begins to show that now you can see that you either can stay in heaven or that your consciousness can drop and to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, and there you only experience woe, whereas up to that point you were in heaven and it says, rejoice ye, rejoice ye, rejoice ye, everything is fine, salvation has come, the power of God has come, the power of the Christ has come, rejoice ye, everything is fine. But what happens with you if you don't stay there? Are you completely lost or not? Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil is come down unto you, those who stay on the earth and the sea, having great wrath, because he knows that that he has but a short time. If one knows what comes afterwards in Revelation, and as we go on, we will remind ourselves of this passage here. He wants to show here, and that's why it's in the tone of love, he wants to show here, I think, and also Mrs. Eddy wants to show it here, then in the explanation, that actually, if we stay in heaven, if we stay with that consciousness of the woman in heaven, that then with the micro state of thought that has destroyed, that has cast out the devil and the serpent, that we reach the point of salvation. That there is a way, a divine method of warfare. But is that a real salvation if there is only shown that you are saved already with the woman's state of consciousness? What about those who cannot hold on to that state of consciousness, who are still in the earth, and the devil comes down, and the great red dragon comes down to earth and to the sea, and he comes down with great wrath, and we experience that great wrath, we experience it day in, day out, year in and year out. Are they lost? Are they completely lost? And love says, no, there is still a way out. There is still a way out. It takes a little longer, but there is still a way out. So he has but a little time. He will not last forever. You will not be forever lost. There is a way how to work it out in time. So whenever Therefore, we experience this, that we feel we cannot stay at the consciousness of heaven, and we feel cast down right away into the darkness of everyday life with all its problems we feel we cannot handle. There is still a way of salvation. And that way of salvation, if we start out from the wrong standpoint, from the earth and from the sea, if we start out from error and try to meet error with error, there is still a way out. But that way out is shown in the chapter 13 and following. Yes. From 13 to 18, yeah, 13 to 18 is shown what happens when we take the standpoint of the earth. And how are you going to work out with your divine metaphysics? How are you going to work it out and overcome evil? How are you going to drink the seven vials of the seven last plagues, and how are you to drink them and get through with them, so that finally you come out at the end okay? Then you have gone the way of suffering, but it's still a way. Whereas what we have shown first here, up to this point, is the way of science. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, that's the way of science instead of suffering. So we must see, nobody's ever lost. Love is always that which says you can't escape salvation. But there are two ways, either through science, which is the divine method of warfare, or you go through suffering, where you try to meet or solve your problems from the standpoint of error with error. Then you can't do it, and then you need really the method of divine metaphysics to work it out. Whereas you could also take the woman's standpoint, the method of science, because she left above on line 4-5, she left the subject of truth with the tone of science and says, but science is able to destroy this lie called evil. So you can choose the way of science. If you don't choose the way of science, there is still hope. There is still a way out. And therefore, she is going to show us in the exegesis, or in this tone of love, the way of science and the way of suffering. Yes? So, at this point, we can easily understand why she has inserted that text of line 5 to 12 here before she finished really the 12th chapter. Because already at this point, we are at the crossroad of choosing the method. Now, let's take the biblical verses, which I have read before, but slowly, and I don't read the whole text, but only a few lines, and then the explanation that Mrs. Eddy gave that pertain to those verses. Because in her exegesis from line 24 onward to the next page down, she explains in the same order, in the same spiritual order, she explains those biblical verses. As I have indicated quickly when I read it, she lays it out and shows the love in the fourfold operation of Word, Christ, Christianity, and then science or suffering. So I bring this out. The tone of the Word, perhaps you go now along with me in the text, the tone of the Word is this: and I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, so we are now in heaven, Now is come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God. So you have the word. He depicts first love from the point of view of the word and says, from the point of view of the word, love presents everything in its perfection. Love is perfection, is completeness. Here is come salvation. And you have the standpoint, salvation is an ever-present fact. The explanation of it is down on line 24 to 26. For victory over a single sin, we give thanks and magnify the Lord of hosts. Our Lord, God, the Word. But what shall we say of the mighty conquest of all sin? When we have the mighty conquest of all sin, then salvation has come. That's what Mrs. Eddy interprets. Salvation means the mighty conquest over all sin. So this is our great question. We always are very happy about the conquest over a single sin, over a single sin, disease, or lack and destruction. We are always grateful and happy of any little demonstration or great demonstration, whatever it may be, but of a single demonstration. But Mrs. Eddy says here, is that really what we are driving at? Is not really the point this, that we should see the victory over all sin? Now, actually everybody says yes, but they mean that there are two meanings about it. Everybody says yes, so I better start with the first one, and then with the second, and the third, and the fourth, and the fifth, and the sixth, and then the hundredth, and then the thousands, and then the 10,000 and first. And get on with the job so that I finally come to the point of all. And all is an infinite thing. We can go on all through our life, there will always come up something which has to be overcome. So that's a very dragging method, a very weary method. She meant something else. She meant, if we have the standpoint of Gabriel, then we have the victory over all sin. Because the Gabriel is that standpoint where we see that love is ever-present ministering love. That love is only wedded to its own idea. It's that Gabriel state of the woman where the divine principle and the divine idea coincide. That's where all sin is overcome. Yes? So can you see, again, that if we make that terrific switch from the objective approach to the divinely subjective standpoint, that from that standpoint we have overcome all sin. Because if we go out from the synonymous term, as Mrs. Eddy has said right before, love, what was that rendering? To infinite ever-present love, all is love. Can we imagine any sin in all is love? It's impossible. You begin to realize something that I tried over many, many years already. I can look back, I think I began to try to show it about 30 years ago. I never found really an ear for it. About this. Why not go out from the synonymous terms? Why not reason in categories? Why reason up to categories? We have to reason up to categories for a while, because somehow we have to get the tonality of mind. We have to get the tonality of spirit, of soul, principle, life, truth, not. We have to get the tonality of word, Christ, Christianity, or Christianity and science. We have to somehow get the tonality of science itself, divine science, absolute Christian science, and Christian science. So there is an objective approach to these terms until the terms become tone, become consciousness. But then don't go back. Stay on the housetop and don't go down again. Then from that point go out from the capitalized terms, but stick to them. Just as he's going to show here, stay in heaven. Woe to those who go down again to the earth and to the sea. Stick to the capitalized terms and see, and be satisfied with the concept that going out from the capitalized term, it will cover all that is necessary to be covered in the human. It doesn't exclude the human. What it does, it translates itself to the human in the way that we don't need to know. It is a self-operative translation that goes on. We don't have to call God down and translate God down to a situation. So our culture would be to culture our tones until they become concrete and spiritually tangible, alive, present, and then stay in heaven. Salvation has come. Then we can say, now we know what it means, the victory over all sin, without having to conquer all the billions of different sins. That is not the way. That's the way of the cross, not of the crown. It's a cross to battle with every single sin. That's all right at the beginning. That's all right until you find your true method, until you find what Mrs. Eddy calls the divine method of warfare. Then we see the nothingness of anything that is unlike the capitalized terms, and so our consciousness is only roaming in the field of the capitalized terms. Then, what shall we say of the mighty conquest over all sin? That's the word. Then comes a touch of the Christ. We go back to the Bible there, namely to line 15, after the kingdom of God, and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night. Can you see here what I said before about the billions of overcomings and the one overcoming? Here he says, and the power of his Christ. What is that power of his Christ? For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night and day and night and day and night and day and night. That accuser, it just brings forth day and night new accusing. Day after day, new accusing. Day after day, all through our life. Life is just a dreary thing to carry through from the birth until death. Huh? That's the accuser day and night. How can we handle that? He says, you can handle that accuser that accuses you constantly, 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 constantly. You shut him up and he begins to accuse again. You decapitate it, it's like a hydra head, and you decapitate one head and two grow. That's what the hydra head is. It's a story that if you capitate one head, that two new heads are growing. So that's what happens, the accuser, that is accusing day and night. Shall we deal with them one by one and one by one? Or shall we do what he says, that that now is come salvation and the power of his Christ? There is only one Christ. There is only one Christ. Therefore, if we see that the divine principle, the Word, has a Christ and only one Christ, we only make, so to say, one demonstration, namely to stick to the Gabriel consciousness. Then there is no accuser there. Didn't he say that the accuser is no more there at that point? Can you see, we must, so to say, kill the noumenon of evil and not the phenomena of evil. The noumenon is one, the phenomena is infinite. And out of one noumenon of evil comes infinite phenomena of evil. The dragon and his angels. The one dragon and the infinite angels of the dragon. The phenomena of evil. So, if we stay with the seven synonymous term, if we stay with the capitalized term, we stay with just one, the infinite one, and that covers all human needs. That's the meaning of a science, to reduce the infinite phenomena to one principle.